I would say it's The Who. It's definitely all about The Who.
Welcome to the American Grown Podcast, hosted by Austin Sullivan. The American Grown Podcast will focus on people from different walks of life and their journey to where they are now. Now, turn up your volume and settle in for a great episode.
This is the American Grown Podcast, recorded inside the ColorTech Creative Solutions Studios. Today, we have Mike Reese, owner of Quiddy Hollow. He's a maker of custom crafted products. Mike, welcome to episode 77 of the American Grown Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, glad you could make it in.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know we've been playing it for a little bit now. I think Foxcrest Farms.
Yeah, that fall, that initial fall festival they had where I was set up right next to Matt there. And I had kind of heard about you through him and stuff and saw his stuff that you guys did together. And yeah, next thing you know, you walked up and we were chatting.
And shout out to Matt at Cleona Coffee Roasters. He is a sponsor of the American Grown Podcast. One of two. The other one is Triggered 22 with Rebecca. But yeah, I remember going up to Matt because my buddy was there and his family. And I'm like, hey, this is the coffee guy I was telling you about because he's a big coffee drinker. And my wife saw your Philadelphia Eagles cutting board or yeah, the charcuterie board. She's like, I really like this. So then for Christmas, lo and behold, I'm like, that's going to be your Christmas gift, you know? So absolutely, that worked out really well. Yeah.
Yeah. The birds going to the Super Bowl pushed a little bit of a thing that people wanted a couple things for the tailgate or for the Super Bowl party. So we kind of had those available and those definitely caught some eyes that day.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh, and especially too, with all the hype with Kelsey and yeah, Kylie and everything. Yeah. And then Travis with their podcast, New Heights. I don't know if you ever listened to one of their episodes, but it's crazy.
I've seen clips of it like online and stuff. It's yeah, definitely hilarious.
Oh, it's blown up. Yeah, it's huge. So yeah, that's how we first met. And I just happened to be like, hey, here's my card. I like what you do. I'm a big, like the table here, you know, Live Edge.
Yeah, I noticed right away.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I was like, oh, for sure. I could engrave. That's what my brain does now. Oh, I could engrave that, right? You know.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Well, you could engrave this too, something this big.
We could, absolutely. Yeah, we could, our one machine could, it has a format that it could fit that right in there, and we could put your logo on there.
Whoa, okay, we might have to look at something like that. Yeah, it's 6 foot by I think like 3.5 or something, plus the American flag here in the studio is reclaimed wood from a barn down in Tennessee. It's an Etsy find, so for all those people out there that like Etsy, that's where the American flag came from there.
It's a nice one.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. That's a little background. Let's hear like your story. Where did you grow up and what was your early childhood like?
So yeah, I'm definitely local to the area. Our family is from Hershey. I grew up in Hershey, Hummelstown area as well. Went to Hershey High School, played hockey and a couple other sports, some tennis, some football. And yeah, there was definitely a good childhood there. I had three older sisters, Lauren, Elizabeth, and Lindsay. My mom's family, Italian and Polish, like immigrants kind of. My Italian side is a little bit more in detail, and my grandpa from Hershey.
What'd your mom and dad do for work?
So that's kind of what leads to what we're doing now. My dad and his dad had businesses throughout time, small businesses here and there. They were custom home builders at one point. They've done all kinds of different little things. And my dad kind of always stayed in that like housing business. He was project managing and renovating, and for a long time now, he's had his like handyman business where he does renovations on people's houses and stuff like that. And that kind of thing is kind of was always in the mix of like my dad and him are always hands-on, always doing things, you know, as far as outdoorsy people, cabin people, doing things outdoors and doing them yourself was definitely a big part of that. And then my mom's side, my grandpa, my great-grandpa, they're very hands-on gardeners, you know, making their sauce and their stuff like that at home, and all those stories of, you know, the homegrown Hershey Italian kind of thing. And yeah, he was like a rose gardener, my great grandpa, for, you know, like some of the Hershey corporate people. And so he was like a gardener there. It's just a really kind of interesting little story where my great grandpa was like a sheet metal worker and he could do just about anything with his hands, they said. So I feel like the creative part kind of stems from that with what we're doing. And then with my dad's side of the family being the Reese's and the candy company being kind of part of that heritage, the candy manufacturing and then them having their own businesses and stuff, as I was growing up, I definitely was always interested in like that world of manufacturing and stuff. So I was always making stuff for people, just kind of one thing or another in a wood shop. And then it led to this. So
what did you do in high school?
So in high school, I was really interested in this one class we had called engineering drawing. Okay. I think that's where a lot of some things kind of start. There's definitely a seed with this engineering drawing class, and it went well for me. And that's kind of one of the first classes I was really excelling in quickly. And the teacher was kind of giving me extra projects because I just loved CAD drawings. And I was really, they weren't too hard in high school, but you're getting after it and you're kind of realizing, oh, this is kind of my thing. Like, and the other kids are asking me for some help now. And that's not too typical for me, you know, in the academic setting. So that leads to the other classes, which were like a little shop class. I think it was called manufacturing tech or something. And then architectural drawing. And those classes were just, I wanted to be up in that part of the building. And I had so much so that I would grab my lunch and go up there.
Really?
Yeah. And the teacher that was in that shop class, Jeff McNear, absolute shout out to Jeff McNear. I ran into him and told him all this stuff, you know. But at that point, I would go up there at my lunch and like, I wasn't allowed to run the machines, but I was allowed to clean them and stuff. And like kind of organize the shop and like do all the little like kind of, you know, satisfying things that weren't cutting and doing
the behind the scenes kind of stuff. Yeah. It sounds like getting your hands dirty, you know, and learning the equipment. Yeah.
He let me, you know, get everything all dusted off and oiled back up and looking really nice. And it was one of those things where he kind of gave me that space. And then he asked me what I was going to do next. And I kind of was giving him all these different options. I like culinary school cause I work at the Italian lodge and I'm a cook there. And you know, maybe I'd go into the service or something like, you know, there's things going on. I want to go help. But you know, he's like, here's the thing. You should really consider how much you really like this stuff. And, there's this place called Pennsylvania College of Technology. I went there for graphic design a long time ago.
Oh yeah. Up in Williamsport.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. Exactly. Right. Yeah. They're one of our clients. We do a little bit of printing for them. Yeah.
Awesome.
Small world. Okay.
Go Wildcats. So yeah.
They got a cool mascot. Yeah.
Absolutely. It was a good time up there. But yeah, he sent me up there on hey, go check this major out. Go check this school out. This is your kind of school. I said to my mom, I want to go tour this. You know, Mr. McNear said we should go do it. It sounds like it's for me. So I walk into this machine shop lab, which is just a room full, like a football field full. At the time, it seemed that way. Of just machines that I'd never seen before. Lathes, mills, presses, grinders, just all these different kinds of those machines, just everything under the sun. And then CNC machines and robotics stuff and all these just different labs that were just calling my name. And I remember turning around and looking at my mom and just being like, yep.
This is my place.
This is where I'm going.
This is it, yeah.
And she kind of, I think she probably had a huge sigh of relief because at that point, you know, I was kind of, and I'm probably always will be a little all over the place with what I like to do. And so it was kind of hard to, okay, where are we going to get this
kid? Yeah.
How are we going to steer this ship?
Yeah. All good creatives are, right? I mean, you know what I mean? You have ideas and you run with it and you pick this up, you learn this because you're passionate about it. So Mr. McNear?
McNear, yeah.
McNear. So, you know, he saw that you were excelling in, you know, really hands on. And that's kind of where you would say your passion for what you do now stemmed
from. Yeah, that definitely, as far as my, you know, my family and stuff and growing up, I was always digging around. They let me garden in the backyard. And
okay. Yeah.
Kind of tinker in the garage. And there's definitely some amateur pyrotechnics happening, you know, all kinds of stuff that. Yeah. So I was always just had my hands dirty with kind of like messing around with stuff. And I think between that, just my parents allowing me and supporting me like in that way, just kind of being that creative mindset, they definitely allowed me to make messes and cook and
experiment
and do all kinds of stuff. So yeah, that piece. And then, you know, the education system of, you know, doing its thing, like kind of guided me there. And that teacher though, just kind of like saying, hey, what are you doing? You know, that was, I think, a huge point. And when I did see him in Lowe's like years later, and I kind of felt good about what was going on, I was like, hey, you know, hey, you're the reason I went to Penn College.
Yeah.
You're the kind of the reason I have this CNC and CAD thing going on. And thanks, man, because that's like, I really like it. You know,
that's phenomenal, right? Yeah. Cool. Teachers can have such a positive or negative impact. I mean, I've heard some stories of like teachers that have just like, you know, a couple examples for the listeners. Tony Sinico mentioned when he was in school, you had to fill out a form, you know, or it was on a computer, I guess, but it was like, oh, what your career should be. And he wanted to be a history teacher. And the teacher's like, no, I don't think you should do that. I don't think you're smart enough to do that. And it's like, man, teachers, like, especially early on, can leave such a lasting impact. And here,
oh yeah, I have one too.
Yeah,
I definitely asked, when will I use this in math class? And it was like a trig class, which, funny enough, would kind of like sort of come back around in ways, but which is just great, because he and I butted heads. But I said, you know, when am I gonna use this? Doing that, you know, punky thing.
Right, right.
And he said, well, you're never gonna. And the whole class was just, oh jeez, because I was also a little hot headed.
Okay, were you?
You know, yeah, oh yeah. I definitely had that stage, and let's hope it's completely passed. But they're probably like, oh geez, that wasn't a, you know, nice comment. But
yeah,
I kind of took it to heart, like, geez, I guess he's, you know, what's he saying? But anyway, that teacher has that lasting memory. And then there's the guys at the complete opposite end of the school, where those guys we mentioned earlier with Mr. Magnier. So
that encouraged you. And then so what did you do after college? Did you immediately start Quiddy Hollow, or how did that come about?
No, I definitely did what some people would call the victory lap at Penn College. I took a little extra time to get
nothing
that
wrong
done.
With that.
Yeah, it was an all around really good, really great place for me to land there. And then afterwards, in that long journey, a little extra long journey, I took a little break and worked and kind of realized, okay, yeah, I like this manufacturing stuff. I like being in these shops, but let's go finish the deal, get this manufacturing engineering degree, and like get into the next level of position instead of just where I was able to go get a job quickly, you know, when I took my break. So get out of school and doing some random stuff here and there. I was landscaping type of guy and did kind of odds and ends jobs to help my dad out and, you know, help him with flooring or, you know, demolition. I'm really good at demolition.
Well, that's totally probably, I imagine that's probably
can
pretty
totally
fun.
Tear things apart.
Yeah.
That's for sure. But, I would meet my now wife at Trogues. I would start to make friends there. They would tell me, just get your foot in the door if you want a job here in
At Trogues
for packaging or something to do with the manufacturing of this beer, right?
Yeah.
I was like, I would love to work in this because this is a manufacturing facility, right? So
cool product.
Yeah, cool product.
Blowing up.
Yeah, awesome place to work. Like,
yeah, cool facility, right?
Awesome girl that I'm meeting here. This is a full circle package here. Like, this is great. So I get my foot in the door getting a dishwashing job there.
Okay.
And I'm working in the kitchen, working with those guys, great guys back there. And a job opens up in the packaging line as just a packaging operator, and I go take that job. One thing leads to another, and I end up getting a supervisor position that I wasn't quite ready for, which is what kind of the hindsight of all that is like, okay, I just wasn't quite ready for that position, let alone third shift.
So oh man, yeah, definitely third
quickly
shift.
Took some turns on me. And what also took a turn was that my wife got her massage therapy license and had this really cool opportunity up in the Poconos to go to the lodge at Woodlock and do massage therapy there for them. And I was kind of like, yeah, I'm along for the ride, let's go.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
there was some really neat just kind of like things that were leading to. I was like, oh, we're gonna live up in the Poconos, like there's these people say they can kind of help us find a house nearby this place, which is just a little remote up there. So it was all kind of leading to this cool situation, and we went up there and we spent a couple years doing that. And I was a hiking pretty much a hiking outdoor guide, where we would take people on hikes and mountain bike rides and teach them how to fly fish and stuff. Well, me and a couple of guys were fly fishing guys, so we would teach that class. And
I've never done that. I heard it's
gotta get out there.
Some people say it's really easy, but then I don't know. I fished before, but never fly fished.
Well, yeah, it's definitely a little bit of an art. Some of the pieces of it are a little bit of a learned art, but it's my job is to make that easy when we were teaching how to do it. So we did a pretty good job of getting people on a little sunnies out in the little
people
lake.
Were actually catching them and everything.
Them all hooked up. It was a good time. So we were up there for a little bit, and it was a good time. But it was one of those situations where you're like, well, we're really family people. We're 3 hours away.
Oof,
you know,
yeah,
and maybe it'd be fun to get back to where we were and try and make things a little bit bigger, maybe start a family in a little bit here. And we're just family people. So another thing that kind of happened was my grandpa passed away a little bit unexpectedly in a way. It was kind of a quick thing. And that led to my dad taking his property over, which is where our shop is.
Okay.
Where Quiddy Hollow is. And that property is Quiddy Hollow. To kind of get back to Quiddy
Hollow. Yeah. It's come full circle. Right.
So we move home. He's in that new position at that property. There's a shop there that he kind of used as his home base for his renovation, Doug Reese Handyman business. And I kind of was bouncing around, helping him, doing landscape, sort of throwing around some ideas of what to do for a business for myself, because I was starting to think and feel like, you know, I feel driven, but I don't feel like I'm being used as much as I want to be. Like, I really want to make something out of this time here on earth, you know? So like, let's just go for this small business, this self-employed thing. Like, let's give it a go. And my dad was really supportive of the idea in any capacity. Like, I'll absolutely support you with this and I'll join you if I can. And he had some really good ideas, and they led to us partnering up, making some agreements and buying some machinery. And one of the things is that big laser that I said could, you know, probably engrave
do the
that
desk can here.
Definitely yeah. engrave this desk. And so with his ideas and my like drive of like just wanting to kind of just bite into some apple of whatever kind, like I just was really hungry. It just led to Quitty Hollow being this like conglomerate thing of, you know, we have our balance of skills between the two of us. We communicate really well. Like let's dive in. And with the CAD and the engineering type of, you know, thing with the CNC machines and all the stuff that we learned up at school, I was really ready to apply that in like a more creative fashion. And I mean, at this point now, it's definitely people are like making a lot of money just making things on the internet as makers, just visually. They're not even really
100%.
They're not stocking shops. They're just making really cool stuff.
Right.
And
yeah.
So
it's awesome stuff.
That whole like just lore of, wow, people are really making things. Like, this is really accessible. I'd like to take what people are kind of doing and try to like scale it up a little bit and do this like local manufacturing thing and use different skills, different materials, and kind of like root it all in like this local community thing and see where we can take it. And that's kind of like how it leads to there, you know, from college in some short way, I guess.
Yeah, it's perfect. So shout out to Doug. I mean, shout out to your father.
Yeah, like, yeah. Everybody, the whole family is extremely supportive. I will say that. I mean, Doug is extremely supportive. His wife, Katie, is extremely supportive. My mom and Bob, my mom, Leslie, her husband, Bob, super supportive. And my sisters, always bouncing stuff off of them. Lauren is our accountant.
Okay, yeah. You got to have a good accountant for
we
sure.
have... Elizabeth is extremely creative and like has a good eye for things like with this type of stuff. So I can bounce stuff off of her. And then Lindsay has a really cool job where she actually works with like product safety and like things that like, you know, all kinds of different product safety things where if we get to that point, she'll be really, really useful for some advice.
She'll have
that,
you covered. Yeah.
You know, she'll make sure we don't get ourselves in too big of a hole with anything. But yeah, so everyone's extremely supportive. And then to go on that too, my wife is Rebecca Smith. She's a Anvil Cleona gal, and that whole family, that whole system is super supportive. And and I know our 10-month-old little baby Anastasia is super supportive. She's super supportive of the business. Yeah.
She brings the cute aspect.
You know? She really
especially
does.
Especially when you come home from a long day. That's our daughter. She's a year and a half old, Parker.
Oh, nice.
And now she's the point where she's walking and everything. And it's like when you come in the door, it's like, dad, 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 dad. You know, like that just makes it all worth it. I feel like in life, especially owning your own business, to have, and I've mentioned this so many times, like what I call is a rock. Like, sounds like your father, your wife, I know my dad, my wife are huge, like supporters, you know, mm-hmm. to have that base of like people that no matter what you say, like, I want to start a podcast. Some people be like, Austin, you're crazy. Like, why would you want to do that? You mm-hmm. know? And no, we're not going that route. Or, you know, why would you want to get into what you're doing with bees and honey and everything? But to have that support, people that believe in you and will support you and back you no matter what, I think helps not just in business but in life.
It's like the lifeblood of like kind of what allows me to push this as far as I hopefully can, you know. And that's like definitely grateful as can be about that opportunity that just life has given me. And I think, you know, I have an abundance kind of mindset. I try to anyway, and I think that the abundance is just opportunity for me that I have. There's just a lot of different ways that little opportunities just keep presenting themselves. And sometimes they're just opportunities to learn, you know. It's not always, you know, these crazy big opportunities. It's just, there's a lot of little ways to just take what everyone has to offer and kind of apply it. And it's just, it seems like everyone's got my back and
yeah.
I've got an awesome an awesome support system. So
for sure. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
It's definitely a big piece of it.
Like I said, when I came to pick the Eagles cutting board or charcuterie board up to see your dad there, Doug, I was like, man, that's really cool. I mean, to work with your father, because sometimes, you know, I mean, I'm thankful and grateful I get to work with my dad and my grandfather, who's 86, you know, but some,
cool.
Yeah, I know, but some families don't get along.
Does he work
though.
Here too?
Yeah. Oh, like, my grandfather?
Is he like in the building? Much?
He comes in every morning. Oh, yeah. Okay. Every morning. He's 86 years old. You know, they broke the mold with him and no filter, you know, all this good stuff. And he kind of, you know, devils the employees, but they, you can tell they appreciate seeing him.
Yeah.
And it's like a morale boost, even though
100%.
He's just so left field, you know. God bless him. But yeah, he still comes in.
That's what they're good for.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. So he used to do sales back in the day, and he was very good. You know, in his heyday, he was close to $3 million in sales.
Oh, great.
And yeah, he had clients like Hershey Chocolate, you know, Hershey Entertainment, Giant, U.S. Foods, Rite Aid, you know, all these big name brands. But yeah, so it is nice that I still have him to run ideas by and talk to. But yeah, like you and your dad, you get along great, it seemed like.
Yeah, there's definitely like this cool balance between things. And he definitely, you know, if I have an idea, he's going to listen to it. And that's a really cool thing. I definitely have seen the other side of that for people where there might not be as much of that, you know. So it's hugely grateful for that kind of thing. And
yeah.
Yeah, it's and I think it's like if you have an opportunity like this to work with him and have, you know, the property where you can have a small business start up, and hopefully I can grow it to a point where I need a bigger building or something, or expand the building or whatever it may be. But just to have that ability to start something and give it a go is huge.
Yeah.
And
it's that quality time too, because that's the one thing you can't get back, right? So having time with your dad, you know what I mean? Like,
I mean, we were laughing really hard today at one point, and I just, in that laughter, I was like really like kind of like, oh, that's what it's,
that's what it's all about.
That's what it's about.
100%.
And also like just kind of letting the things that we both like kind of be alive in the business. And I'm a little bit dominant when it comes to like some of my ideas or my opinions. It's always like he's very good at like silently keeping me in check in a way. It's like, he won't ever shoot me down, but I'll know when I need to like reel it in or double think that, or
I see what you're saying.
He'll let me know without, you know, like derailing me with anything. So yeah, it's,
gotcha.
It's cool. We don't bash heads like some people might. So,
and I've heard horror stories too of like, yeah, some family businesses where it's a son, father, or son and yeah, father, grandfather, same thing where they're just cursing at each other, or, you know, you don't know this, you're an idiot. And it's like,
the Tuttles, you know, the Paul Tuttle effect.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I used to watch that show all the time.
Yeah,
Orange County Chopper. Yeah.
But not if it was your real life, you know.
Can you imagine if that was real life?
Stress,
yeah. So. That's no fun for anybody. Yeah. But yeah, I used to love that show. Oh my gosh. When you mentioned that, I was like, wait, oh yeah, Orange County Chopper.
If we had a reality TV show, it'd just be more goofy, and we probably have to censor a bunch of things. But
yeah. So in the shop, do you listen to like any bluegrass? I know you're a big bluegrass fan. Like,
absolutely. Yeah. So there's I definitely get DJ Mike going a lot, and sometimes I overdo it, but yeah, bluegrass is definitely one of the
DJ Mike. I love it.
Yeah. It's because I listen to a lot of different stuff. Very eclectic mix of music. And sometimes, yeah, like there's one thing Doug might say, you know, I'll say, are you cool with this? He'll say, well, maybe not today for the ninth day in a row or something, you know,
right.
That ADD kicks in and you're just playing the same song over, and he's like, how many times? But no, it's bluegrass is definitely in there. We play a lot of classic rock. We play a lot of I'm like a reggae kind of person, where I like that obviously classic reggae is great, but like the California reggae stuff, where Revolution's one of the bands I really like, and Stick Figure and The Movement and all those guys like that, just kind of that upbeat stuff, fun vibey stuff. But even like Krugman, stuff like that, like I call it cool elevator music.
Cool elevator music. I like
need it. To like just like zone in, and there's no lyrics. Like,
yeah.
Tones from Krugman.
Okay. So what about, so I have a good buddy that listens to the podcast, and he's a big bluegrass fan, even though his wife is like, not so much, but
it happens a lot.
Yeah. What's like, so what's like a song or like a band? I don't even know. I guess they're bands. I don't know. I don't know what bluegrass goes by, but like, if you had to be like, this is the group to listen to.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So absolutely. Have to say, it's an obligate, as my best friend Steve Leonard I have to say Serene Green or anything Steve Leonard does is the greatest. No, just kidding.
Yeah.
But I would say if there's anybody that Steve's gotten me really into, because Steve Leonard is the reason I listen to bluegrass for sure, 100%. He's a great banjo player. Serene Green is his band.
Okay.
Serene Green, awesome band. But he and I really love Bella or Bela Fleck, B-E-L-A. Fleck. So Bella Fleck and the Fleck Tones. I mean, that stuff's all over, and it's just, that's some really, really great music, really highly skilled stuff. So I'd say if you don't know about Bella Fleck, you should.
Bella Fleck. Okay. There you go, Shep. I know you're listening out there, so appreciate the listen.
The Drive album by Bella Fleck. Go for it.
Okay. Yeah. No, he's a huge fan. I mean, he's big, and he's played a little bit around me, and I'm like, I all kinds of music, but I never really grew up or heard bluegrass. So then when I heard, I'm like, oh, all right, I can dig it, you know?
It's got a really, there's something really deep about the bluegrass that's kind of neat for me. You start to learn about, like, who's playing it back in the traditional kind of, like, I don't know, Appalachian type of,
just, like. Yeah, that's where it started, right?
Yeah, like, I have this vision of, like, an old-timey type of thing, old-timey entertainment, you know, with bluegrass and people that are able to play those strings at the end of the day and put some really good emotion into the voice and, like, put some, you know, and then there's like really fun songs too, like Jim and Jesse and Old Slewfoot. That's another one if you don't know.
Okay, Shep. Now I gotta look it up. Yeah, Shep, yeah,
Jim and Jesse and the Virginia Boys, man. Yeah. See, now you got me all. Me bluegrass in my head.
Yeah, yeah, and your buddy. I'm sorry, my name's
Steve Leonard.
Steve, I was gonna say Steve.
Banjo Steve Leonard
Banjo Steve Leonard. Is he a local to Lebanon County?
He's a Hershey guy too. Yep.
He's a Hershey guy too.
Yep.
Oh wow. Well, hey, the podcast is always open if he ever wants to come on. He could bring his banjo and play.
Oh, he's
that would be so cool.
He'd probably be all about it. He'd probably want to bring somebody along with him so they could duo. I got the
second
whatever.
Mic. Yeah. Oh, that would be neat. I'd definitely be down for that. If Steve's listening out there, let's take a quick sip break.
Sounds good.
The way, yeah. So yeah, to pick back up, Quiddy Hollow, named after it was your grandfather's property, his shop, and there's actually a creek, a Quiddy. Right? Quiddy's a proper term.
Yeah, so Quiddy is like short for Quiddipahilla.
Quiddipahilla.
Quiddipahilla Creek flows like through Lebanon, Anvil, Cleona, and then Anvil, and then into the Swati. And the property that the shop is on is on the Quiddy. So that's kind of where the name comes from. So Quiddy is the local creek. We're fishermen. We're outdoors people. We are definitely nature guys. And it's just a unique local word, the Quiddy. And
yeah,
if you know,
it is.
It's like if
it
you
is.
Know, you know, kind of what the Quiddy is. And everyone loves the Quiddy. You know, you go kayaking or float down it, Quiddy Park, trout fishing, all that good stuff. So because my grandpa had that property for however long, it kind of became like a nice little play spot. Like I'd go out there with my buddies and we'd have fires and things and, you know, tool around in the woods and do all kinds of stuff out there. And the way it's laid out is that the house and the shop are kind of up, if you will, and there's a hollow or a little valley that leads down to the Quiddy. And the hollow part is obviously the little hollow that leads us down to the Quiddy is there, but the word hollow is kind of cool because it just kind of sticks. My grandpa used it a lot, and my dad kind of grew up using it with like the different places where they'd hunt up in Tioga County. There'd be like Butternut Hollow and like all these different hollows with different little names. And so like that kind of just brings us this like whole thing of nature and just like what we really like to do in life, which is kind of get out
outdoors.
To a cabin or fish or hunt or something. So the Quiddy and the hollow, and it all kind of lines up with the hollow that is there that I hunt in today. It all kind of comes together. And the name kind of also came from my dad being really good at like making these brain dump like lists. Like he can create these lists of really good ideas, like lists of them.
Yeah.
And you'd like pick one kind of thing, you know. It's like, okay, this is all awesome names for the business that we want to go for here. And I kind of saw Quiddy and it was like Quiddy something that wasn't hollow, and then, you know, something hollow, and I was like, I like Quiddy Hollow. So it was just really another like, hey, he brings the material and I kind of threw it together and we got Quiddy Hollow. And
yeah,
it all kind of has a little bit of meaning, which for me, a little bit of an overthinker. I love all the little bits of meaning. So.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. And it rolls off the tongue nicely. I mean, when I think of a quiddy, it's like, okay, you know, like you said, you're tubing, you know, get a bunch of friends together. You're going tubing or you're fishing and it's a small, you know, almost like stream. Like, I don't know, quiddy. It's just, and I feel like it's a very Pennsylvania term. Maybe not. Maybe it's more used, but I just feel like, yeah, I don't
the Dutchy thing around here. Dutchy, you got that, quiddy. I don't know. There's I hear you. It sticks and it rolls off the tongue as far as when you know with what the quiddy is, you know what the quiddy is.
Yeah.
And with like my in-laws, like they were a big part of that quiddy park. They had a house on Spruce Street down there on the quiddy. So like my wife grew up on the quiddy. Like I grew up playing on the quiddy, now have that business that's located there. And you know, it's just like, yeah, how could you not use quiddy in your name?
Yeah.
If you look, looking back, you know, it's like, oh,
it makes sense. Choice, it's perfect. Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Hopefully. Yeah. So now, what would you say the focus is of Quiddy Hollow?
So we have a pretty open gate with the things that we do, and we can do and we have done. But we kind of try to use our creativity, our tools, and our technology and our craftsmanship, and kind of our level of attention to detail and quality that we like to go for, and we hope to just use that to make, you know, making craft things for people, businesses, and just use all those things together to find, you know, what people need. And with what machines we have and things we have made, it seems like it's going to kind of keep changing a little bit. Things that are kind of trendy as far as, you know, you could name a couple of TikTok trends. Like, I don't know if it's really a TikTok trend necessarily, but like the leather hat patches, that's something we can engrave.
I feel like it's blown up. Yeah,
it really has. And it's great stuff. I mean, it's a great way to put some material together and put your logo out there. And so stuff like that will only be around for so long. And now we don't know where the end of like a Yeti engraving, where the bottom of the barrel is for that, but we do a lot of that. And that's something that, you know, eventually you have to imagine someday.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
People won't buy.
It won't be as popular.
Just,
now, do you do Stanleys as well? Because I know Stanleys are like the huge thing right now.
So we have done some custom Stanleys. There's like a little bit of a thing there where I think if you're going to be reselling and like doing large amounts, you're supposed to be on a approved list of people who are doing them.
Okay.
So I did some testing for some good friends, like put their name on theirs, but. All tumblers are kind of game unless Stanley makes some rules up. So I don't really do Stanley.
Yeah, I gotcha, Yeah.
But I'm working on that too. Hopefully we can get on that list of people who is allowed. I guess that's a thing in the decoration industry with embroidery and all kinds of stuff. You have to sometimes have your
some red tape a little bit or something.
Which we're gonna respect that at a, you know.
Yeah.
If someone brings it in and says throw a laser beam at this, I'm like, I'll do it, but we're not gonna necessarily do thousands of them, which we've done thousands of Yetis.
Wow.
Thousands of polar camel tumblers and hundreds of other different types as well. And that was actually kind of how we cut our teeth a little bit. There was this one year, 2020, where we couldn't do anything. And we started in 2019. Like, we really just started right before that all went down. I actually have a box still somewhere of these little magnets that said, keeping it local. It was a Pennsylvania shape. Wooden Pennsylvania shape it engraved, keeping it local, little magnet. I was going to walk around to different businesses and just talk about what we were going to do and offer. And that same week when I had them all glued up and ready to go, the world shut down.
Yeah.
Literally. So we kind of like started spinning our wheels and going, I guess it's time to do R&D and just keep things going as much as we can. But then one day we got a phone call and it was really random. Like I love it because I didn't see it coming, which is the neat part, but I got a phone call. And the guy asked me if I could do like thousands of Yetis. And I'm standing in the middle of another event where I have some products there and I'm kind of showing them to a person and I'm kind of waiting in between things. And all of a sudden this guy's kind of giving me this huge opportunity and I've never done thousands of Yetis before, but yeah, I'll do them. Yeah, absolutely. We'll figure that out.
So what went through your mind, though, when he called? Were you like, okay, like, are you serious? Like, you want thousands of Yetis? Or?
Well, this guy's definitely serious.
Okay.
This guy, like, I knew about this guy having potentially, like, be, this guy could potentially be a connection for us, just to do more work, but it didn't strike me as something that would go like that fast. So it was really neat and it went really smoothly and well. And we, you know, got our ducks in a row. He gave us the pricing and everything of what we were going to do. And it was one of those situations where I needed yesterday and it was for the holiday season. So
wow.
My dad and I kind of like, well, I don't know. Maybe I looked at my dad and said, we got to do a lot of work here. And he said, all right.
Yeah.
And we did 14-hour shifts overlapping. Ooh. Oof. Engraving Yetis for like days and yeah, days and days,
just
and
nonstop.
Days. Like it was, that's all it was doing. Take, because yeah, at that point, yeah, that's as fast as we could go, and it is what it is. So we did that, and that was one of those things that, like we'll see, you know, how many thousands more we do. But
yeah,
that's one of those things that definitely kind of like is something we like cut our teeth, I would say, because we stepped right into manufacturing thousands of something or decorating thousands of items for somebody. And that was where the other light bulb went on, where we said, okay, so if this guy needs this kind of work, this could be a thing. Like we could find plenty of people who need our laser engraving service. And that's kind of what it has turned into now. And that's, if to kind of try to reel back the focus piece, is like just to provide a high quality, you know, local as well as, you know, decent reach. I like to say like a premier laser engraving and cutting service on the East Coast, like one of the top, is what I would say I'm striving to maybe get to one day. And I'm going to let the wind get me there in a way. I'm not going to force that.
Oh, no, you can't. Yeah.
It's going to, but so far so good. And it kind of continues to do its thing, which is cool. So.
Yeah. I believe you put something out there like in the universe. And I mentioned this again on other episodes, and you strive to be the best you can every day, you know, that it'll kind of see itself through, you know, kind of handle itself. Now, of course, it doesn't happen like magic. Obviously, you got to put the time and put the work. But like if you say, you know, you want to be the premier, you know, up and down the East Coast, then it's doable. Anything's possible, I think.
Yeah.
I think anything's possible.
And I appreciate that, because that's one of those things that I think that energy is needed. There's a lot of no energy in the world. So
yes,
positive kind of can do is definitely my vibe. And I think, like when something tells me no loud enough, I'll listen. But I'm a little bit stubborn when it comes to, like, if I have a little bit of a vision and I kind of have a little bit of like a, I think I see something there, like even just like a little project at home, you know, just something small, even, I kind of like just got to see it through. And my buddy Mitch and I were chatting yesterday and about like how we can't just do anything like simply, we have to like go all in and like see like how many we can grow, like, or how many, like he grows like lots of like flowers and vegetables and stuff. And he's just, you know, he's good at it and he just keeps getting bigger and bigger. It's awesome. So there's just a lot of that like positive stuff, like between all the people that are around us, that I think it goes a long way. And hopefully we can continue to find these different projects and people who need our service, and just keep growing the web, because the grapevine was kind of strong before we started, with like being local people and having businesses before and having lots of contacts and stuff. So the grapevine kind of started ready to go, and now it's growing in this direction with this laser engraving business. And it's really cool to watch like where it goes, and like meeting you, like it's just nuts how
that's what I mean. I mean, you know, had we not gone to that festival, I don't know if our paths would have, you know, I'm sure at some point we would have crossed, because my wife and I, you know, we do love to go to like vendor expos and things like that. But like, have you ever gone back then to revisit, you know, back in 2019, right before COVID? Like, because I feel like you should, and maybe you have, go to like local businesses and leave them, like you were saying, a magnet or like a business card or something. Because I feel like you're a pretty good kept secret here in Lebanon County. Like, I really do. The products you put out are fantastic. And I feel like if more people knew locally, they would use you. I mean, I'm sure they might not do these large runs, but you never know.
We're trying. Yeah. I think that's what we're starting to realize, where our strengths and weaknesses are. And I think that's where, like the future is for us, is to that broad gate we had wide open to do all these different things. We realize what's good, what's bad, and what's kind of definitely don't do that again kind of stuff. You know,
yeah, what works and what doesn't. Yeah.
But we're going to just do what anybody does, which is, you know, see what works and try to repeat it and do it again. And with the local thing, it's tough doing one-offs and stuff like that. It becomes a little bit, the passion kind of overtakes the profit, and you end up spending like way too many hours on a $20 something, and you're like, wow, man, this is not gonna, that's not sustainable.
Yeah.
But when you take a few years and you're where we're at, we're like, okay, we know what we should be doing for people, what we can do efficiently, you know, some of the stuff that we're going to be relaunching our website, and we're going to have a little bit of a limited selection of things that we're decent at, and some examples of things that we're good at. And it's just one of those things where there's a lot of things that we can make for gifts and people, like in that realm.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a whole lot of things that are like riveted to the back of an air conditioning unit on a roof, you know, that's an engraved tag that they need 200 of when they make those units.
Okay.
So there's stuff like that, that we kind of
really industrial, finding, like, yeah,
kind of more industrial jobs and stuff like that, where you have that kind of behind the door stuff people don't really even think about most of the time. And then you have the stuff that, we're looking at here, and, you know, bottle openers and keychains and, you know, the tumblers and the Yetis and the charcuterie boards and all that stuff. That's the kind of stuff that, people see. And what we've realized is that's the stuff that gets us visibility, and that's the stuff that gets the conversations rolling. And then it gets the person in the door who needs those air conditioning tags that I'm talking about. And that's now that puzzle's in place, and hopefully he continues to connect us to more people. And that just is like,
it grows and just
the absolute essence of it
exponentially. Yeah, for sure. And now, you know, you work with some large clients, in particular, you know, I see all over your Instagram, Trogues, and you brought a sample of Trogues here in Hershey. So, like, man, how did you come across, how did that, I know you used to work there. Tell us how that happened.
So that work out? Yeah. That was just kind of was timing, as well as who you know, not what you know.
Okay.
And I think that's definitely a huge piece of Quiddy Hollow, is the who you know, leading us to getting the fire started. And we got engaged. My wife and I got engaged, and we came to Trogues to have a celebration gathering. And
good choice.
Of course. And one of our old coworkers, who has, you know, worked her way up a little bit in that business, she said congrats. And I just kind of knew she knew a little more about the gift shop than the guy who just gave us our beer. So I kind of jumped up and said, hey, you know, I've got this thing going on. It's just started, and I have this little idea. I just want to bring it by for the gift shop. And I just would like to see your idea, you know. And she's real cool. So she's like, yeah, man, like, maybe a little closer to gifting season, because it was like middle of summer. I said, no problem. So I made the one that's sitting here. This is the one that I literally walked in there with and said, this is the idea. This is the prototype. It's a little wooden bottle opener. And she's like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
This is great. You can do this. You make these? I'm like, yep. We make them. We cut them out. We engrave them. And then we pretty them up and assemble them. And that's that. And they had magnets in them. And there was a couple different renditions of them and different species of woods we made them out of. And that led to little cheese boards. And that led to little magnets. And that led to little leather lanyards that we do now. And other versions of the cheese board. And displays for magnets and displays for lip balm.
What?
We
really?
We don't make the lip balm, but we made the display for it. And
yeah.
So there's just like this cool little opportunity there where just kind of who you know, and then having a little bit of a, like, I guess, motivation to just go just say something and just like see, like, I definitely throw a lot of stuff at the wall. And in my head, I throw even more at the wall. And so I think as time goes on, I'm more willing to just throw it at the wall and see what someone's going to say. In this particular realm with business, for sure. And that it landed well, and it grew. And that was like our first kind of merchandise situation. And it definitely, it went well. And we have little leather keychains, little wooden magnets for the fridge. And I think we still have some cheese boards in there. Right now there might be some other items still in there, but yeah, that's one of the ones that was a who situation. And then we got to be doing some of the other large companies just through the connections. You know, these guys work with these guys, and now you're putting, you know, little candy company logos on things that are pretty big, and you're doing stuff like that, and you're like, wow, this is neat. I might not be sitting in that corporation office making the sale, but
yeah,
I get to throw this, I get to put this stuff through my computer, through my machine, and polish it up and say, yeah, look at that. That's going to go to a Fortune 500 company's employee for their corporate gift. That's pretty cool.
That's so, pretty awesome. Yeah.
The more of that, the more of that, the better. And there was also, you know, we did some stuff for Hubble. Hubble is like the telescope, but
yeah, I was gonna
they
say
Hubble do like electronic instruments and stuff and like little.
What you done stuff for like Hubble?
So the but that's the who. My my mom.
These connections,
you know, no hiding is here. You know, my mom's husband is, you know, connected in that world with GE and Hubble and some stuff there.
Wow.
He was able to say, hey, you want to do a gift for us? I have a great team that could use a great gift, and you make stuff that's cool. And he's like a cook guy, so he wanted me to do a cheese board. So we did a cheese board. Yeah. So that was cool. But yeah, it's I would say it's the who. It's definitely all about the who, which makes me want to plug the book Who Not How. Which is
okay.
part of my little bit of Audible listening.
Who Not How
is a really great book for anybody who's out there trying to figure out like, I need to be able to get a little more done here. It's all about the who.
It's all about the connections. All about the who.
And
I like that.
Stuff like that. Who's going to do it? How, who's going to do it? Not how you're going to do it. So it's a definitely a powerful thing.
Wow. What's the saying? Is it carpe diem? Seize the day, seize the moment. Like, because you went up somebody at Trogs. I mean, some people wouldn't have the gumption, but you believed in yourself and your capabilities and your product that much to be like, hey, you know, we should partner. We should work together.
Yeah, and it's cool because you don't expect, like, you kind of, like, I think a lot of people, like, you kind of, like, expect the worst in a way. You're, like, ready for them to be like, nah, not for us, or who are you, or something
right,
like
yeah.
that. Like, so it's definitely a weird phase of small business, kind of, like, you know, I did have a phone call like recently where the person's like, who are you? What's your name? And I'm like, oh, they didn't really remember me, huh? So, you know,
Quiddy Hollow.
They
what
weren't
the
locals,
heck?
So they didn't
Quiddy Hollow, if you're listening.
Oh. Yeah, they didn't really know. They don't know the Quiddy, I guess. So I'll give them that. But like, oh, who is this? Oh, the honey guy. Yeah, okay, that's right. So it was, you know, it's one of those things. So
yeah, it's about the who.
Yeah, it's about the who. So
that should be the title of the episode. It's the who. I like that a lot. Yeah. You know, what would you say if you had to pick, maybe what are your top like three most popular items that like people order?
For sure, the tumblers are like a constant thing. We actually partnered up with Jono Ace Hardware out in Jonestown really early on to supply us our Yetis. And then we offer the engraving service there so they offer it to the customers. They, you know, if they want their name or their logo or something, we'll come pick up one. We'll go engrave it. We'll go drop it back off. Right there at Jono, like, you know, kind of for them. So Yetis are a rolling thing. And then between all the functional items that we do, like the bottle openers and the coasters and the little wooden things, like the functional items are kind of a big category that we sell a lot of. Because statistically, I don't know if we sold more bottle openers or charcuterie boards.
I was going to ask, yeah.
It's like, I boiled it down to like functional wooden items. Because the wooden items are definitely of the majority, and then the tumblers just are always happening. And then really from there, the honey and that kind of has really started to take off, and jars of honey are selling more and more as things go. So
that's a perfect segue, because I was going to say, let's talk bees. That's literally the next point I have. So, you know, you brought a jar of honey. What is it like, and how did you get into beekeeping? When I think of bees and beekeeping, I picture, okay, you got like the mesh hood and the outfits, so you're not getting stung, you know, the full long sleeves and maybe gloves, and you have a smoker to keep the bees calm. How did you get into beekeeping, and what is it like? I mean, that's a huge jar of honey you have here.
Yeah, that's a 2-pound jar. It's definitely one of our top sellers for sure. Once people like our honey, they seem to come back for the 2-pound jar. So funny enough, when I pulled in, I saw Courtyard of Honor on your
yeah, Randy,
banner.
Courtyard of Honor. Yeah.
So Randy McKillop heard us talking about wanting to keep bees. Me, my dad, and my stepmom there, we were interested. For years, we've been interested in trying to get into beekeeping. And it was one of those, like, mentioning it to Randy turned into what we have now, long story short. But he introduced us to Mark Bogret, who was, you know, a bee geek known as a beak.
A beak. I like it.
So,
yeah,
so Bogret, Bogey's Bees, he came out and just absolutely mentored us to the point where I got addicted to it. And I couldn't stop. I kind of like just couldn't stop like making more bees and trying to just like manipulate them to do the things that, you know, beekeepers do, which is make more bees, make honey. And there's a whole lot more that goes into it. And when you say, let's talk bees, my brain goes, oh boy, that's a huge can of worms or bees or, whatever you want to call it, because it's such a really, really deep world of a hobby industry, all those things that it is, because you can keep one or two bee colonies in your backyard and really enjoy that. And you can also have thousands of colonies and ship them across the nation to pollinate almond trees in California that just got finished. And then they come back to the East Coast and kind of land in Georgia and Florida. Then they make their way all over the country to pollinate everything else. And yeah, as far as fruits and stuff go. And that's like the huge commercial end of beekeeping, like forklifts and freight trucks and huge tanks of sugar and stuff like that. And then it's just really, really, there's not too many things that span where you can have one or you can have 4,000 and you can all be beekeepers. So we would be considered sideline beekeepers because we have between 40 and 120 hives at any given time. I peaked out at 115 colonies wow, last year. And then
holy cow,
right now we're working on probably about 50, 60 colonies.
Okay. So when you say, like, I'm trying to picture, when you say you have a, what do you say, like 120, 125 colonies, is that individual, like the, I'm picturing the boxes with yeah, the, like, you know,
tall, yeah, like skinny boxes yeah, that you see sort of, those are colonies individually. And each yard,
so you've had 100, you've had like 125 of those at one point.
Yeah. And they're all spread out. And now granted those 100 some are not all full blown honey producing production colonies. And some of them are just doing the job of, drawing out more comb and drawing and doing prepping for next year. Sort of sadly enough, not all of them are going to make it through winter one way or another. They kind of all have their job and they all do it. They all do it really well. These bees are amazing creatures and we got into it. You know, I got one hive, my dad got three hives. The next thing you know, we learned that, you know, bees make more bees. Oh yeah, that's how nature works, right? Yeah, and the next thing you know, they've got nine, I've got three. Next thing you know, I mean, it just went,
it blew up.
It just kind of blew up that way. And we kind of maintained that by starting to sell the honey, you know, finding outlets for the bees, and like my buddy could buy them and sell them and do things like that. And it was just that little community of beekeeping and beekeepers is really neat. And we've met some other guys. John Tittle is a local commercial beekeeper that we have kind of been partnering with and getting resources off of and bouncing ideas off of and everything. And I mean, he was calling me about kitchen stuff and I'm calling him about, you know, supplies and whatnot. And yeah, so we got into it because Randy knew a guy basically. And then that guy was just as crazy as me. And the next thing you know, we're calling it like a side gig, but man, it really takes a lot of time and effort. And, you know, every week I'm running around to throw some more bottles of honey in these different retail locations we're growing to have. And it's really, it's cool because it's, the office of a beekeeper for me anyway, when I'm out there, even when there's other guys around or whatever, like my dad or anybody else around it, there's moments where you're really like just submerged in their little world and you're just kind of observing a really, really interesting little thing. And these bee colonies for some reason agree with me, and I don't feel the need to wear all the,
I was going
to
ask,
protective gear all the time.
Yeah. So no.
So
yeah,
like, yeah, there's just this real comfortability I grew to have pretty quickly with it. And I just really like it. It's hard to say, like, I wouldn't say I'm a natural at it, but it went well.
You got a knack for it.
It kind of got a knack for getting in there and having fun with it. And like, there are days where, you know, the bees really boss you around a little bit and they'll tell you to get out, or they'll,
like, by stinging or what?
By stinging, or, okay, or, you know, some,
not,
you know,
today.
Yeah. Sometimes they don't do what you wanted them to do. You know, you kind of manipulate them to help them out and grow and they don't really do it. You know, sometimes there's those natural things that don't work out, but for the most part, really, really the most part, we've done really well. And our percentage of overwintering, which is like how many you get through winter, has been above the Pennsylvania average, which is,
that's great.
Which is great. Yeah. So yeah, we're able to maintain our good population, healthy bees. And our honey seems to be really well liked by people, and we're pretty convinced, we're at this point pretty sure, that it's because we harvest our honey a little bit earlier, if we can, because the early spring nectars that come in are absolutely just delicious. They just, for us, are the premium. And locust and clover and a few of the other early nectars just create this super, super delicious, light-colored, floral-flavored, kind of like there's some fruitiness in there sometimes. And it's really turned into the honey people want. And yeah, they're like, man, that was really good. I really like that. It's not like the stuff from the store. And although it is all honey, we really take pride in the fact that we try to snag that spring honey for the bottles for you guys in your kitchens, because it's really good stuff. So slowly but surely, with Matt Zechman, you know, like we kind of said earlier, plugging me up with his old kitchen, his little tiny kitchen that he started in became my starter kitchen. Because as a beekeeper, you can sell your honey off of your property, call it like farm stand style.
Okay.
You can do that for as long as you want. You don't have to have a kitchen. But when you harvest over 2,000 pounds last year, you kind of have to really.
Wow. 2,000 pounds. Holy cow.
Well, yeah, it was a good year. It was like for me.
Yeah.
I will say I took a gamble early on in the year and said, I'm going to push this spring honey thing and see if it doesn't bite me because I, you know, we really love that honey and it's worth it. And there's a lot of that goes into like why that's risky. The early season bees are really ramping up. They're really growing fast. And to make more bees, they split in two and they swarm. So they swarm out of the box. Basically the old queen leaves with half the hive and the new queen that they're creating that just emerged stays behind and takes over. And it can happen multiple times, you know, in a year at a time. So if you're kind of pushing them to fill up these boxes to the brim and not creating more space for them the way we kind of do want to do that, they will swarm on you and you'll very quickly kind of lose out real quick. Like yeah. There goes, it's just like half of your printing shop just walking out one day and like right, you just have yeah. to like start yeah,
they're
over.
Like we're done
like yeah. like however many guys are up there, I don't know, yeah, you know half of them literally just walk out and they take one of the managers. No,
it's right. the, yeah, it's like queen. Devastating. Yeah, right, because if the queen's not there, then the
well they bees? Make a new one, so okay. it's a little yeah. bit off there, but yeah, it's detrimental if that gamble doesn't go
doesn't,
well
doesn't pay off. Yeah, yeah.
It can really really hurt the harvest, and beekeeping being an agricultural thing, it's a little bit of you're depending on Mother Nature's blessing to, you know, gift you that harvest of early spring conditions. Last year the locust trees had blossoms on them for like I lost count. I was so excited and I was yeah. like, this is awesome. These locust trees just won't drop those petals, which is a great thing. And then 2 years prior it was like, hey, look, there are the locust blooms. Oh, there's a frost and a windstorm. Like, they're gone.
Yeah.
So, like, it, you know.
It all depends on Mother Nature.
Yeah. So,
and you're really walking the line with these bees. Like,
try. I mean, it's that might be slightly dramatic for me, but at the same time, it's an investment. So, if it goes wrong, it really.
Yeah.
It can be a smaller harvest, which supply and demand.
But 2,000 pounds of honey. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was.
So, let me see this. I don't mean to cut you off, but what does it take to make a 2-pound jar here? Like, how much is that, like, two hives together? Is that one hive? I don't know.
So, last year, I was saying I had about 40 honey-producing colonies. And to get to 2,000 pounds, they would all have to average 50 pounds there.
Okay, so, yeah.
I was saying just about 70-ish, about 70 pounds a hive was what, and that's the thing. There's some whatever there going on. There's smaller hives that donate to that harvest that I wouldn't call one of those 40, and some of those 40 are going to produce 30 pounds, and some of those, I mean, very literally, some of those 40 colonies are going to produce like 100 some pounds of honey.
Wow.
So the average being 50 to 60, 70 pounds of honey for 40 colonies, that gets us to that over 2,000 pound number. And not all that 2,000 is the premium spring honey. So we do have this, what we call summer honey, and we do some other stuff with it. We do sell it to some bakeries. We do sell it with flavoring in it, with natural flavors. And then we also do what's called spun honey, or some people know it as creamed or whipped honey, where it's like a controlled crystallization honey. It is like a smooth, spreadable honey product, which is really just honey that has a certain, you know, granular crystallized honey mixed in there at a certain ratio. And then the rest of the liquid honey takes that same form.
Yeah.
And it solidifies like that. Not like the big chunky crystallized honey you get out of the cupboard that you're like, oh man, this crystallized, it's all kind of chunky and like shards of honey in here. It's like a really nice smooth
spread, like a nice spread. Nice spread of honey.
So it goes really amazingly on toast and stuff. So we do that, with some of the honey, and yeah, it's pretty wild to like some of these colonies. You just like, you're in awe. Like at this part of the year, you're walking up, you're expecting them to probably not have filled that box yet, and you pick it up and you're, wow, okay, that one's full. Get another box. And then, you know, at the same time, you have these little colonies, you're nursing them along, and you're trying to get them to a position so that they're ready for winter. And there's just this kind of ever morphing like population of bees that you have at our size operation. And it's a really fun time. I'd love to have anyone who's interested, you know, come out and put a suit on and check it out. It's a really cool time. I'd love to do, you know, and I know my stepmom is into this too, like instructional, you know, experiences and stuff down the road, maybe when we have some things in line, but you know, have people out, put some suits on, get a couple hours out there or an hour to experience it and get educated. And
that'd be really cool.
Yeah. It'd be really neat. So,
yeah. Cause I mean, and bees are so important to life. I feel like to the world, you know, I feel like the bee population in general, isn't it like on a decline? I don't know. I feel so, like yeah. I heard that somewhere. Yeah.
There's,
which isn't good.
Right. Yeah. So honeybees are like the captain of the pollinator team in the world. They kind of get all the spotlight of like, being the ultimate pollinator or something like that in a way. And in reality, I think what most, and now I'm not a like biologist, or an entomologist where I know insects to the next degree, but the pollinator population is what's on the decline. And all of our bees are kind of on the decline in a wild and natural sense. So in one sense, I'd say there are probably more bees, honeybees in backyards than ever before at some point of the year, you know, some point of the time here, because like the pandemic kind of sprouted a lot of backyard beekeepers and people who can stay at home now and stuff. So that's great. But the reality of it is a bee is a certain size with a certain size tongue, and it can only pollinate so many of the flowers and the fruits and the vegetables in the world. The rest of the pollinator population, which survives extremely, you know, on its own wildly, is being decimated by the pesticides, is being decimated by, you know, the kind of the habitats being ruined in a way. You know, if you go back years and years to this, you know, area, you would see a lot more hedgerows and tree lines and thicker, brushier stuff in between properties, and it's all been bought, knocked down, and made into more fields, which it is what it is. But those types of things all around kind of deplete the habitat for those bees. And there's solitary mason bees. There's all different sizes of those kinds of little bees. And they're probably the ones that we need to, you know, if you really want to do your thing and do your part, those are the types of efforts you want to put, save the bees towards. Me and the rest of the beekeepers are going to keep making bees, and we're going to have tons of honeybees. I really have there was a scare when there was something about bees, colony collapse disorder, but that's kind of not as much of a thing right now. So yeah, I think the native pollinators need a little bit more attention. And it's simply because they all have a little spectrum job there, and the bees, the honeybees that we all love, they can only do so many of those jobs, and they can only pollinate so many of those flowers. So yeah.
And shout out to Randy. So yeah. Randy, oh, this yeah, all stems back to Randy at Courtyard of Honor. That's crazy. And his episode actually comes out, I think, right before yours is coming out. It's right before yours.
I told you I'd stream all over the place from thought to thought. So <That's> to perfect. Take it back to Randy. Yeah,
yeah, take it back to Randy. Shout out to Randy.
Shout out to Randy McKillop.
Wow. So that's how you got into the bees. So now what do you see as the future for Quitty Hollow?
So I think we're going to continue trying to offer our service of engraving and cutting. And we're going to we're going to try and narrow in on those products that we manufacture in-house and just have this nice menu that'll kind of morph and grow with time. But take what we know from the last five-ish years of business and narrow it in and scale it up. And what's really nice is that we are finding those relationships that we need to diversify those jobs and those projects, from embroidery and screen printer guys who want our hat patches, like genuine leather hat patches and stuff like that, to the guys with the air condition tags, to somebody who needs a corporate gift and needs, you know, 5 bottle openers for their guys or 100 bottle openers for, you know, their whole office of people, you know, whatever it might be. So to take what we know and take it farther and keep just kind of giving it what it deserves as far as, you know, a local brand trying to do quality stuff, going a little bit extra mile to get a little bit higher quality, maybe a little bit, do something that's just a little bit extra cool or special, or just, and I think that's what we do, is we try to keep the ideas flowing. The future is just to let those ideas kind of be what we do and let the scale go up. We have an intern.
Really?
Yeah, we have a high school kid, Donovan. He's about to graduate, and he has gone from, like, you know, not really sure what to do when he gets there to, like, he has his little tasks that he, maintenance tasks, and he's really good on the drawing on the computer. And so scaling up that way with the young crowd that's really good with the computers and the tech is one way that we want to try and see the future go. And yeah, we're just going to keep making relationships and selling honey and shooting laser beams.
That's awesome. Shout out to Donovan. That's so cool. You got an intern and, you know, you're doing great things. And I'm sorry if I was driving you nuts sending you the logos for the American Girl podcast, because I'm not a good, like, I didn't design it. We have designers here at Color Tech, you know, so when you were asking me questions, like, oh crap, I don't know. And I'm talking to my wife. I was like, what should I send Mike? You know, I was like, I don't know. But tell us a little bit about the items you brought. There will be photos up on American Girl Podcast, Facebook and Instagram. But yeah, what do you got?
So the Trogs bottle opener is just the OG bottle opener prototype. And that just kind of is one of those, like, that's like, you see the first dollar stamped on the wall kind of thing. That's kind of like that for us. You know, that's one of those first products. But the rest of the things you see here is one of our more, what would you call it? So it would be like our, I don't want to say generic, but it would be our
standard.
There you go. Our standard bottle opener, which is just our bottle opener puck. It's the same size as a hockey puck. We are hockey fans, which is, this also turns into like a replica hockey puck, and
if needed,
which it has before. But anyway, it's a little bottle opener, and it has your last name on it. So it's a gift for you.
Well, thank you. That's awesome.
It's made out of walnut. So we cut that out on the CNC router, and we can personalize them, put logos on them. We've done a lot of those puck style bottle openers, with the hardwoods, cherry, walnut, maple are the three that we get into the most. But that's an old standby. Definitely the little puck bottle opener. Now, sometimes we go and we add magnets all over it so it catches the cap and sticks to just about anything like that. So that's the one thing, and definitely something we've seen a lot of in the shop. Another thing is your logo on a piece of cherry. What's cool about this is that you, with the logos we were sending me and my inability and my lack of skill to be able to, like, do what I needed to do, because you sent me good files. You really did.
Were they? Okay, because I wasn't really.
It's a heavy file, or it's a big file for me with a lot of layers, a lot of colors, and it's kind of 3D, and you got the little highlights on your cheeks and your shirt, and there's little things in there graphically that are kind of work against the laser software. So what was cool is that you kind of pushed me to say, I was like, if I'm going to make this, I want to make a sample for him, I'm going to have to learn something new today. So,
oh wow.
I kind of dove into, how am I going to make this a highest quality, you know, image for laser engraving, on the softwares that I had, and YouTube did it again. You know, it gave me a few answers, and
University, right?
Yeah, really, seriously. I was like, okay, that's cool, because I've had a couple logos come through where I really struggled to get what I wanted out of them. The cherry block and this leather coaster have your logo engraved in them, and it's cool just because the path to getting that logo to look like this was just a little bit of another learning thing. And it's like just another opportunity where I could say, hey man, I can't figure it out, or like, hey, I want to be able to figure these out, because every once in a while it happens. So
Yeah.
This is a leather coaster, genuine leather, and we've done a handful of those. We do them any shape. This one happens to be a circle. But we can cut the leather any shape. We make leather keychains. We make some other like leather bottle opener things. And so this is just one of those, and the hat patches is what I'm trying to think of.
Yeah.
So there's a few leather items that come into play, and I thought, I just really like this color of leather, so I wanted to give you that. And as I knew you talk whiskey and beer, so I was like, he'll probably use a coaster.
Yeah, definitely.
So coaster looks bottle great. Opener. And then this little block of cherry is kind of like what I call like a logo block. So if you have like a logo and you want like a backdrop little prop or something in your office on your shelf, on your windowsill, it's just kind of something we've done for people really simply. Like, I just want my logo on something so I can – so that's all that is. And cherry shows up real nice. So we have that. And then, of course, the big bottle of honey. And so
thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. And Doug's, I'm sure he helped out. And you know, it's neat that to see it, like, it looks cool. And the fact that you were like, instead of being like, no, Austin, I can't, like, hey, you know, you can't give me the right file, I'm just going to turn it down, you went like out of your comfort zone, learned something new that now you can carry on for like other clients, other opportunities.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah. How that just naturally continues to happen too. And that's like what I was saying earlier with the abundance of opportunity. Like, it just seems like it's weird, because some days I could definitely see it as like things work against me.
Yeah.
And like there are harder days when you're like, man, I just can't, like, I can't help but drops everything I touch or something, you know, like clumsy days. But
yeah,
that's like always sort of where I hope to just remember there's always like that opportunity. And so like, I'm frustrated with the logo, but I'm like, it's a really good logo. Like, I really want to be able to engrave this logo. So there's neat things that'll just come out of each relationship. And that's, I definitely appreciate that this time with like not expecting it. Once again, like, that's where certain things, like, you can tell they're just organic, you know, don't expect it, teaches you something good, gives you something cool, opportunity to record a podcast with you.
It's yeah.
Neat little nerve wracking experience for me, but it's fun.
We're in it now. We're in a full swing now, you know, and all because of, in this case, Fox Crest and stopping there. You know, like I said, I love Live Edge, anything wood. My wife knows this. She's like, you're nuts. So when I saw you there, I was like, I gotta go talk to this guy. I gotta go introduce myself. And that's one thing. I'm not, I used to be shy and scared of the dark when I was younger, but I'm not anymore. And it's like, well, everyone's probably like, whoa, that's really random. But you know what I mean? I'm not afraid to go up to people and be like, hey, here's my card. My name's Austin. I have a podcast. Do you want to come on and like share your story? Like, I don't know. I'm not afraid to make new connections. And like, you know, just, it's cool to hear what other people do and like what makes them tick. And then to learn something new, like the bees with the honey and everything you guys do, you and Doug, you know, you and your dad. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a cool journey. It's very multifaceted, and there's a lot of, I think that was part of the struggle for me to like, I thought about how I would explain myself or what we're doing. It's hard because there's, like I said, an open gate of things we have done and can do. But at this point we're humming along with the machines that are doing a lot of the work and the bees that are, making great honey. And it's definitely a huge blessing. Like, I haven't gone a day without being like, man, you just keep going, because like you have the opportunity, and that's a lot more than some people can say. So the amount of like giving back I would love to do eventually is huge. I think there's so many really good like celebrity or like local and public figure type of people who are really good at giving back and showing that, like, you know, it's not all about the dollar sign for them. It's about giving some of that back. And, you know, we have our little idea of hopefully giving back to the Quitty in a way, and doing our little Quitty cleanup stuff and doing, I kind of had this little idea of doing a bluegrass and cleanup day called Pick the Quitty. So you're
picking
trash, picking bluegrass at the end of the day, you know, a little event, maybe ends up at Quitty Park or something, maybe a food truck or something like that. And
yeah. That sounds
maybe
awesome.
You know, maybe not this year, but you know, as we get the munitions to kind of get that together and give back to the community that way, it'd be awesome. And then, you know, growing up, like watching hockey players go to like, you know, hospitals and do cool things with people. Yes. And like that kind of energy, you know, of just being able to give back is huge. So, you know, hopefully that can be a part of how we grow too, is to, you know, be known for that as well. So
yeah, it's the who. And it's those connections that you then make because you give them back, and you know, it grows and expands your brand. One of the things I've, again, mentioned on previous episodes is, like, one day I'd like to get some sponsors, but I'm not doing it for the money. I'm doing it to meet new people, make mm-hmm. connections, learn what others do. But, like, I always thought, man, it'd be great to get some sponsors and then be able to go, like, if nonprofits having a golf tournament, boom, America Own Podcast is sponsoring the golf tournament or whatever it may be, you know, doesn't even need to be like something that you get credit for, but to give back to the community, like you're saying, because at the end of the day, money is a tool that you can use to maybe make connections. And then that leads to the other opportunities, you know, and that's how I look at it.
Yeah. I think that's, if, you know, sitting here now after talking a little bit and thinking a lot about what I would say to you and in this recording, it really is about for us, it's really using the who, you know, to grow what we've grown, because funny enough, we haven't really used much more than social media and word of mouth to get where we're at. So it's almost like we haven't even thrown that much gas on the fire.
Yeah.
As far as things go. And I think as we mature to find that sweet spot that I'm talking about, and that focus of the wide gate kind of narrowing into this few lane highway, we know we're good at, we can offer quality products in these realms. That's like the, I don't know where I was going. I just kind of lost my train of thought there, but that's kind of that's just like all of that kind of leads back to us just being able to talk to this guy and talk to that guy and always have these connections. And it's just, it'll never stop amazing me, the connections that we make and then how we make them. Like, yeah, none of the good ones were forced. I'll tell you that. That's the cool part. Like none of the good connections are forced, and it's really neat that way. And I think that's like what just fills up the small business person is, like, you know, like when Matt and I start nerding out about coffee, there's like this like really neat, like just like agreed upon kind of excitement about what he's doing. And, you know, I mean, I try like to pump his tires, like I definitely do, like he'll come out with something or whatever, and it's just like, dude, that's awesome. Like we're just good at bouncing each other off of each other like that. And I'm just using Matt because a lot of people know him
on
his podcast and stuff. And he is definitely very relevant like that. But there's a lot of people like that for us where, like, even today, like a friend of ours who works in the promotional items industry, he stopped by to pick up his son's project for his business. And then we talk about a few more projects, and it's just this like ever rolling ball that, is hopefully snowballing in a good way. And I feel like it is. So yeah, it's all about just the who for me. And it's so funny that it keeps coming back to that.
It's all about the who. I love that. I'm going to title this episode, it's all about the who, because, that's what it is. And, Matt's, episode is within the top five most downloads, for the American Girl podcast. Yeah.
It's a good episode.
Yeah. Thank you.
He's got a cool story, and, he's good at telling it.
For sure. So now, how can our listeners connect with you and follow along on your journey?
So Instagram is definitely my most active account, at Quiddy Hollow. We also have a Facebook at Quiddy Hollow or Quiddy Hollow Custom Products. So those two social medias are definitely the most active thing. And the Instagram is where I like to have a little bit of fun and do stuff that way. We have a website, quiddyhollow.com, but we're rebuilding it right now. We're kind of changing the brand of website that we are using. And we think it's going to definitely help, like, the purchasing and stuff like that, that we didn't really have set up before. So yeah, at quiddyhollow.com will be refreshed very soon. So you can check that out and, test out our ordering and, see how it works for us. Give us some trial runs here soon. It'll be in a few days. Honestly, it'll be hopefully beginning of April here.
Oh, wow.
It should be up. So,
by the time this episode goes out, it should be on.
So,
okay.
QuiddyHollow.com and at QuiddyHollow on Instagram are the two best ways.
Before we close out, is there anything else you'd like the listeners to know?
No, not really. I I guess I'd just say thanks for listening.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yes. Thank you for listening. And if you'd like, on Spotify, Apple Podcast, or iHeartRadio, or Amazon Music, you can follow along, leave a rating if you enjoyed the episode or if you learned something new about bees or Quitty Hollow in general. So I'll close it out. Mike Reese, owner of Quitty Hollow on the American Grown Podcast and the Color Tech Creative Solutions Studios, thank you for joining me. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. To see photos of today's guests and more content, just search American Grown Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
If you'd like to be a featured guest on the podcast, please direct message or email Austin at AmericanGrownPod@gmail.com.
This episode was brought to you by these sponsors.
Cleona Coffee Roasters is a small batch coffee roastery and coffee shop, veteran and first responder owned, community oriented, and roasted fresh to order. Now open inside 911 Rapid Response, Anvil, PA. Go to CleonaCoffeeRoasters.com to order online, see updated hours, and find where you can buy it close to you.
Triggered 22 LLC, a veteran-owned apparel company. By purchasing a t-shirt, hat, or hoodie from Triggered 22, you're not only supporting a small business, but you're bringing awareness to veteran PTSD and suicide. Please help save the lives of those who fought for our freedoms. Visit triggered22.com now and place your order. Let's help those suffering from invisible wounds.